You are listening to Zed Games, Australia's most beloved gaming radio program. You might be listening to us on the Community Radio Network, but we are also coming to you live from 4ZZZ in Brisbane. I am Lee. Joining me in this episode is Razor.
Hey, Lee.
And Ms. Candy Payne.
Hi.
Ray, what is happening today?
Lee, you've been playing The Secret World...
Legends. I haven't been playing The Secret World Legends. I have been trying to unravel the greater mysteries and conspiracies that haunt the planet and struggling with it a bit. We'll get into that later.
We also have a special guest joining us very shortly. His name is Richard Easts, and he's responsible for Richie's Plank Experience, which is a virtual reality game that preys on your fear of heights.
That's exciting.
Yes.
You've been on the Plank Experience, haven't you, Ray?
Yes.
And what happened to you, Razor?
It was terrible.
Yeah.
Where did you end up, Razor?
Where did I end up? What do you mean? I ended up in the game. It was terrifying. I'll tell you guys about it later on, maybe. But before all that, the weekend gaming news headlines, please, Miss Candy Payne.
Sure. Dion DiMucci, singer of the 60s hits Runaround Sue and The Wanderer, has filed a lawsuit against the makers of Fallout 4. DiMucci, better known under his stage name Dion, says that the images shown in the trailer are repugnant and morally indefensible. The trailer in question shows a city levelled by a nuclear explosion before a montage of scenes featuring the protagonist of the game exploring the wasteland and shooting enemies as the 1961 hit The Wanderer plays in the background. Dion signed an agreement with Universal allowing for the commercial use of his music, but his contract includes a right of refusal clause giving him personal authority to veto use for any product that he finds objectionable, as well as the right to negotiate a licensing fee. Dion says that ZeniMax failed to reach out to him and now seeks $1 million in damages and the offending video be removed from YouTube.
Mm. Well, Candy, you had some thoughts on this one.
Yeah,
like the video, right?
I really do like the video, but I'm someone that studied music and, you know, movies and visual effects and things like that. So I always really appreciate when the visuals are completely different to the music, you know, like as in this is a nuclear wasteland, there's lots of shooting going on, and it's this really lovely kind of happy 60s tune in the background, and it creates a really effective trailer, and it's been done in a lot of movies, and I love that kind of thing. And, you know, it's called The Wanderer. It's literally this guy wandering around. There's a line in there about his iron fist or something, and I know that's not what the song lyrics were obviously intended for in 61. It was not a nuclear explosion, but I actually really liked it. I thought it was a perfect song for this trailer, and it was really effective.
It really is. I like when game trailers and movie trailers change the context of
completely
an old timey song like that to sort of give it a new darker meaning, and I think it was really effective in that particular clip. However, it's not really a case of is this like cool or not. It's more of a case of is this like legal or not as far as this guy's intellectual property rights or his, you know, his rights to control his own art. And I mean, fact is he's got final say according to his clause, you know, his contract with Universal.
He does.
If ZeniMax didn't reach out to him, then they're in the wrong.
Yeah.
And this is interesting because ZeniMax are a very litigious company, and they've certainly filed many, many lawsuits against people recently. So it's interesting that, you know, someone's suing them for a change.
Pretty certain they've got that $1 million in them. they can most likely settle this one if they need to. Yeah, look, it's a good clip. It's not exactly like a new thing for Fallout to overlay their 50s nostalgia ultraviolence with actual like pop songs from the era, but this was very effective. I do think that like given the actual, I mean, a statement he made, he described the artistic intent of the song The Wanderer, and it was a very generous description of a song that is basically about a dude who's like, it's great, there are ladies everywhere and I just go around banging them. It's awesome.
So it's not the strongest case for him to say it's morally indefensible because, you know, I don't really like the morals behind his song either.
Yeah,
but
No, it's so I thought that was a very interesting tack to take there. But, you know, like, if ZeniMax didn't reach out, then probably should have. And there's
legally speaking,
a whole bunch of other like era-appropriate pop songs that they can overlay over the lone wanderer shooting super mutants.
Lighten up, Dion. It was cool. One of the rarest Nintendo games in existence has fetched a record-setting price of US $42,000 or $55,000 and sold on eBay this week. Only a few hundred copies of Stadium Events were sold in North America, which was intended for use with the Family Fun Fitness Control Mat. The game, released for the Nintendo Entertainment System, was recently featured in the documentary Nintendo Quest. According to the seller, his mother purchased the factory-sealed game from a thrift shop in Queens, New York, not realising its rarity and value. Best mum ever.
Yeah. Yeah, I wish my mum would get me a present worth $55,000.
Yeah, she probably picked it up for $50.
I'm wondering
bucks.
If she loves me.
I mean, to be fair, what actually happened is that that guy's mother bought him a 32-year-old, like, game system for the NES, which, like, if you got from a thrift store, you would kind of roll your eyes at that until you discovered that it was
worth $55,000.
Yeah,
that's true.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean, technically, she bought him garbage. It just turns out that it's incredibly rare.
It's very rare to some.
Yeah.
Also in Mega Rare news, the Mega Rare retro game cartridge has sold for nearly €4,000 on eBay. Lakers vs Celtics and the NBA playoffs is a 26-year-old Mega Drive game that was never officially released due to licensing issues. According to publisher EA's records, 192 copies of the game exist and only 13 have publicly resurfaced since 1991. Why 192 copies of the game left EA in the first place remains a mystery, even to employees who were on staff at the time. The auction winner, who chose not to be identified, says that he is a collector who is striving to collect the full set of Mega Drive games.
There's a lot of mystery in this story.
Yeah.
We essentially know nothing, right?
Well, we don't know who he is or how anything left the office, yeah. But it's there.
Yeah.
We do know that someone paid a bunch of money for a crappy game.
Yeah, well, I mean, maybe it's amazing and they're keeping it a secret. Like, it was licensing issues that caused it to not get released. It wasn't because they were like, no good. But yeah. It's a very strange arrangement to have. Just like, what if we have a game about the Lakers versus the Celtics? Like, that's the game.
Yeah. I'm really curious to see, like, why those games got sold. Yeah. Who bought them? Mm. Who are these people? How do they have such power?
I want to know what the licensing issues were. I was more interested in why it never went anywhere.
Well, I guess there are two licenses there, and they based the game around them, and which one didn't work? Well, maybe they didn't get either.
No, it's the Lakers versus the Celtics, but I'm assuming there are other NBA teams in the game as well that they play against.
Well, why would they... You should mention them too if you're going to go.
Yeah.
Don't narrow the title down to Lakers versus Celtics. It's not going to have a huge market.
The title is Lakers versus Celtics and the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
Very long title.
And the NBA playoffs. Other teams, maybe.
Yep. Hmm. No. I reckon no other teams, just those two teams.
Okay, well, that sounds like a terrible game.
Well.
Great story. Not a lot of information.
Yep.
Make up your own version. Basically. That's it.
Yeah, that's it for the Week in Gaming News headlines. Thanks, Candy. You're listening to Zed Games. And it gives me great pleasure to introduce our guest for tonight, Richard East. Hey, man.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Now, Richie, you put out a game last year called Richie's Plank Experience. It's a virtual reality game. I've played it. Kind of enjoyed it. Would you like to tell us what it's about?
Yeah, sure. So... It's a game where you scare the crap out of your friends. So you buy a plank of wood from Bunnings, any size, and then you add it to virtual reality down to the millimeter. It sets that up for you. Put it on some sponges, and then you walk it. Except in virtual reality, it makes you think that you're 80 stories high. And as you walk out, a bunch of different sounds start playing, and... your friends entertain you by screaming and swearing and falling over and having a good time. Yeah, that's it.
What are the tricks that this game uses to fool you into believing that you are actually 80 stories above the ground?
Yeah, so when we developed it, I wanted to take advantage of the depth perception. So I put lots of different objects between you and the ground, and So, for example, birds, clouds, air conditioning vents, flagpoles, windowsills, trees. And so you see these things all the way down to the ground and you're like, oh my God. And so as the doors to the elevator open, I trigger a handful of sounds as well. It's amazing how much difference the sound makes. So the sound of birds, really strong wind. For the hardcore fans, they set up a fan as well. And just, I cannot believe how many people have played it and enjoyed it. And yeah, people making compilation videos of the falling. Yeah.
Before we get too far into the falling, sure, take us back to where it all began. I mean, you know, like VR is not the newest of technologies at the moment and walking a plank is not terribly new either. So where were you? What made you think this was going to be a successful game?
Well, my wife and I came up with the idea. I was mowing lawns and we went on our honeymoon. That was my last job. And we went on our honeymoon in romantic Japan. Mm-hmm. Wasn't really romantic. And
your poor wife.
I missed the flight. First. Oh. But anyway,
oh.
I won't bore you with the details. We got to Japan and we went to see a giant robot.
Sure.
And next to the giant robot, they had this VR experiment by Bandai and Namco. Mm-hmm. They were experimenting with VR. And the thing there that people loved was an experience to walk the plank. And it was pretty good. It was getting a lot of screams. And we were like, when I got home, I thought I can recreate a very basic version of that in a weekend so we can scare my mum. And then I'm like, we should add a few features to this and we might be able to sell it. And we did.
So you said that before your honeymoon you were mowing lawns as an occupation?
Yes.
But then you knocked together this game in a weekend.
Yes.
Have you worked on games previous to that?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I develop games as a hobby. I think it's a really fun hobby. Mm-hmm. It involves programming, art, audio, and I never thought it was a prospective career move because it's so risky getting into game development. But when virtual reality came out, I was thinking, oh, this is the start of a new age. This is a new opportunity. Yeah.
Mm. Where is this one set? So talk us through the actual visuals. What does it look like? You say you come out of an elevator and that's the first thing you see is a city skyline. Mm. You're 80 stories high, something like that. Tell us a bit more.
So there's a few clues. We didn't model it on any city. Mm-hmm. However, the age of the city, I would say, is about Brisbane. Yep. Brisbane age, modernness of the buildings. Mm-hmm. There's like an old building that might represent, you know, town square or something.
Yep.
And no city in particular.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are some of the objectives in the game, other than just walking the plank? I know there's cake in the first few minutes. I've seen people trying to reach cake or throw cake.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, what else do you have to do?
Sure. So, well, you know Steam. Mm-hmm. We're like, man, we're getting it drilled by people on Steam in the reviews because all you do is walk a plank.
Yep.
So we knew we had to add a few extra features to surprise people. So one of them was mapping a real-world object, the plank. But then we knew that people wanted to fly around like Superman. So we added a Superman flying fireman experience. So you get to fly around the city with the arms out like Superman.
And it's probably my favourite feature.
Put out fires. Yeah, some people just buy it just to do that. Yeah.
Now, your game actually translates very well for the streamer YouTube kind of creator experience because it's basically just people freaking out, right?
It's hilarious.
Yeah, so I've seen a few videos, some of which have millions and millions of views, demonstrating this game. Were you surprised, like, when this game took off?
Yeah.
Like in that way?
I sometimes watch game development marketing videos mm-hmm. on how to market your game, how to get PewDiePie to review your game, and all these marketing tips and tricks, and we're like, oh my God, these guys are just start playing it. They don't ask us for a free copy either. They mm-hmm. just buy it and start playing mm-hmm. it. Like, there's no secret or tricks to it. We couldn't believe it. Like, we were expecting it like 1,000 sales by Christmas, or hoping for, and it was about 10,000 by Christmas.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you find it's getting more popular every time a reviewer goes online of falling and screaming and an absolute hilarity because they're struggling to walk the plank?
Yeah, usually the game reviewers now that play it aren't as popular as the initial launch. But it's more now when someone posts a fail video.
Yep.
And then people buy more copies, which...
what does that say about our society?
Yeah. Look, you can hurt your friends. But, if you do buy it, please don't do anything silly. Don't push people. And if they have a heart issue, don't let them use it.
Oh, good warning. I feel like that needs to be a disclaimer on the box.
I'm interested in the extent of your moral and legal culpability in those instances, but I'll ask you when we return from this track. We're talking with Richard Easts, developer of Richie's Plank Experience, a game that is now bundled in with virtual reality headsets. Is that the Vive?
With the Vive, yes.
The Vive. Yeah, right. Yep. So how many Vives are they selling these days? Do you know?
I think they were at a million, just about.
Okay.
Or half a million.
So it's still kind of early days.
Yeah, but we've sold more in the first year than mobile phones did in their first year.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's a good start.
We spoke before about the fail videos. People use your game, and because of the nature of the experience, the fact that they think that they're 80 stories above, the ground, it can be a bit disorienting, whatever, however you say that word.
Scary for people with fear of heights is a good way of putting it.
People fall over. Sometimes they injure themselves. Do you feel bad when that happens?
I do.
Do you really? I would laugh.
Because you said that every time that a fail video goes up, your sales increase.
Well, when the first fail video was posted, we were like, oh, no one's going to... We thought, this isn't going to work. And then, sales did go up. However, it did make us be a bit more concerned with it. So we made sure we put instructions in the elevator to be careful. And we advised people to walk next to the person that's on there in case they do fall. You can catch them.
What's your own level of fear of heights?
I don't have it much.
Don't have it at all? You've had no problems?
My wife... It took her 3 months before she would walk it.
Are you serious?
Yeah, so she
was partly her idea, and she wouldn't even get out of the lift.
So she was a good tester.
Ah, nice.
Yeah.
Ray, I think the listeners would like to know what happened when you tried to walk the plank.
Yep.
Oh, yes. So I did get the opportunity to play the game a few months ago. Now I have a crippling, totally irrational, a terrible fear of heights. It's been with me my whole life.
You have not, as in you don't have it now since playing the game.
He's been cured.
It's still there. It's a big deal for me. I've already made the decision that I will never go skydiving. I'll never go bungee jumping. No one could convince me to do those things.
Never wear tall shoes.
No amount of money. Yeah. And even abseiling, rock climbing, stuff like that, it affects me. It gives me trauma.
So the plank then, how was
so
that?
So I was
great.
Talked into that, and there was an audience there. And it was basically peer pressure. And so I was, I think, the first one to use it on the day. So there was quite a large crowd, and they were all watching me. And it took a long time before I could go out on the plank, before taking those steps. Because when you're wearing the headset, your brain is conscious of the fact that it's a game. But there is something inside you, some primal level of your subconscious that is screaming at you, do not walk out onto that plank. Because of, the immersion, the bifocal, the split screen gives you the illusion of depth. The headphones are on, they give you the illusion of the wind rushing past. And these things bypass your conscious mind and just go into that that primal fear part of your mind.
Well, Richard, I think you did it.
So, yeah, even though I knew it was a game, it would still took me quite a long time before I could actually go out there. And I think I would look like an idiot.
It was after you ran away from the plank.
Yeah, so I had to lower my center of gravity. I sort of crouched and crawled out.
Listeners are missing some great hand gestures right now, unfortunately.
Now, unfortunately... calibration of the space is important. And this is why, because the elevator in the game it has certain dimensions. It looks like it's, I don't know, 3x3 or something. Now, I was in a space in real life that was smaller than that.
Right.
There was a glass wall that was sort of halfway through the elevator or something. Yeah, it just wasn't calibrated right. So
in real life, there was a glass wall.
There was a glass wall. And so when I initially went out to the plank, I was very scared, and I sort of jumped back inside the elevator.
So you fled, is what you're saying. And you fled.
Fled, more like hopped. A sheepish hop.
Fearful. Fearful, though, is what you're getting at.
I was very, very scared. And so I jumped back into the elevator, and the sort of disparity between the game elevator and the real-life place that I was in, I crashed into the glass wall and knocked my head against it. And there was, yeah. Unfortunately, there was someone filming that.
Did you say unfortunately?
Unfortunately.
I think very fortunately for everybody else that was not in the room will one day get to see this video. Yes,
listeners, I have seen this footage and it is great.
And we are trying to track down a copy for Facebook.
This game does what it says on the box. If you want to freak your friends out or yourself, it's great.
I have a question. What happens if you actually fall in the game?
You fall and you go into an afterlife.
I hear if you die in virtual reality, you die in
real life. No. Don't be ridiculous.
That kind of fear into people. VR's
only
just starting.
Although, you know Elon Musk, that crazy guy?
Yeah.
If anyone else said this, I would think it was even more crazy, but I kind of trust him. He reckons, because the way it's going, there's probably only a 1 in a million chance that we're actually a real reality right now, and that we're probably a simulation and we just don't know it.
There's a 1 in 1 million chance that this reality we're experiencing right now collectively is an illusion?
No, it isn't
an illusion.
That we are a simulation, probably.
That's what he's saying. Matrix for this show.
Yeah.
That's very deep. Mm.
Because one day we will be able to make simulations that feel as real as
or
this.
Maybe they already have.
Maybe that's what we're in.
Speaking of which, Richie, VR is relatively new on the scene. It has been out for a couple of years, but it's only been the last 12 months or so that it's sort of been out for the consumer. We've seen the Vive, the Oculus Rift, and then PlayStation's got their own one now. Do you think that this is like a long-term thing that's going to change, you know, the way we communicate and educate, or do you think it's a fad that will inevitably fall and be forgotten, like Pogs or the Yoho Diablo?
No one's forgotten those.
Keeping in mind that Richie's whole business case hangs on this not being a fad.
You know what I'm going to say? I'm betting everything on that it's not a fad. If you've only tried mobile phone VR, I wouldn't blame you for thinking it might be, because it's not that great in comparison. However, I've never met anyone that has tried room scale virtual reality, that is HTC Vive or the Oculus Rift with the touch controllers. I've never met anyone that hasn't tried it and thought it was still a fad. So,
yeah, right.
Do you think it's a matter of improving the hardware, getting it to the point where it actually is as convenient as the mobile stuff that people have more of an experience with before it's going to become more accessible and more successful?
Yeah, so Apple have hired 100 employees, experts in virtual reality and software and hardware, so their next phone or the phone after will likely have everything we need to walk around a room in virtual reality. And also the next wave of Android phones have what's called room scale tracking, which means you can walk around, which is absolutely necessary, I think, for virtual reality. But the phones don't currently have that.
So can we expect Richie's like eye plank experience in the future then?
Oh my God, you just gave me that idea. We're going to have to start working on that.
Our names better be in the credits.
God damn it. Patent pending.
So Richie, VR's application as far as games go is fairly obvious and straightforward. We all know that how they can improve the immersion that we feel in video games. But what other applications do you think virtual reality might have in our society beyond games?
I think the biggest one that hasn't been tapped at all yet is education. I think we'll be able to teach people like they've never been taught before. Mm. There's no distractions. They don't they're not just being taught something, they're actually experiencing it. So to start with, like, history and geography, you'll actually be able to be back in time at the location of different things.
Could I be Alexander the Great?
No.
You can be whoever you want.
Just check out of my real life and be Alexander the Great from now on.
You'd make an awesome Genghis Khan with a big beard.
I'll take that. I love to do all the stuff that he did.
No. He's scared of gory stuff. That would not work. No.
Apparently we're all related to Genghis Khan.
Wow.
Yeah. How about that?
All the big topics
speak
today.
Speak to yourself, but I've looked in the mirror recently and I don't see it.
So, Richie, your plank experience, you're still working on it?
Yeah, so we recently hired a 3D artist who specializes in photorealism.
Ooh.
And I saw what he was working on this afternoon and I'm like, oh my God.
What does this mean for the game? What's coming?
It means
What's
it's
new?
Going to look photorealistic compared to, at the moment, my rookie art, which some people say is still okay. He's going to blow that out the water.
Okay.
So that's going to be a free update in the next couple of months.
That sounds like a massive update.
It's huge. God. It'll be a 1-year anniversary update.
Razor, if you were scared with animation, imagine when it looks photorealistic. Oh my God.
So what's the plan for you going forward, Richie? Just to keep working on this, or do you have another project in the pipeline?
So when this update is out, we will start working on our next game, which we know for sure will involve flying around like a superhero.
Cool.
That's what everyone seems to love.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Richie, thanks so much for coming along to the show and speaking with us today. It's been a pleasure. Richie's Plank Experience is available for the Vive. If you buy one, you'll get the game for free. That's pretty cool. You can also get it on Steam, right?
Yeah.
Please start watching some online reviews because you will get lost in a world of hilarity. I could not stop laughing. I was nearly crying at one of the reviews I watched earlier. Somebody completely freaking out and crawling along the floor. It is good for a laugh if you need one.
Now, Richie, you've given us some codes for the game to give away to listeners. So if you're interested in playing the game and you want a code...
And you have some sort of VR setup, obviously.
Yes, you need one of those.
Oculus or Vive.
We'll put up a post on our Facebook page, which is ZGamesAU. Hit us up on there and we'll probably give you one if there's enough. Richie, thanks again, man. It's been
great.
A pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Lee, you've been playing a game called The Secret World Legends.
Yes, I
now,
have.
You reviewed The Secret World for us originally a few years back now.
I think maybe it was Jody, actually.
Oh, was it?
That one. Yes.
Okay, you guys look the same, so...
It's true. We miss him. So The Secret World was and still is a massive multiplayer online game that is a little bit different to the usual run-of-the-mill fantasy sort of stuff that one experiences there. It is set in, or it was in 2012, it was set in modern times, and the concept behind it was that essentially all conspiracies are real and all myths and legends are also factual in some way. So it was kind of a mix of the Matrix crossed with the X-Files and Lovecraftian horror.
Interesting.
Okay,
yeah.
Kind of sounds like that one comic book, The Sandman.
So, yeah, I mean, Sandman doesn't really deal with conspiracies in any way, but it is all, I mean, there's a lot of mythology there.
Okay, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry to derail that.
But you know what? Like, I can see, like, it's definitely inspired by that Vertigo 90s comic book feeling of taking mythological elements and then setting them in a contemporary setting. So the Neil Gaiman influence is definitely a strong one. It was headed up by Ragnar Tornquist, who was the head of one of the creative directors at Funcom. Guy worked on Dreamfall and The Longest Journey and that sort of thing. So it's an area that he had worked in previously. This was a departure for the company, though. And it has a very interesting design element to it in that, like, a lot of the game revolves around doing actual research and puzzle solving in-game.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're not just, like, in most MMOs where you're, you know, just going out to fight goblins or zombies and gather fruits from trees and what have you, this will, you know, send you off where you actually have to do investigation, and you open up a browser in-game that's just hooked up to the internet that will, you know, send you on a new way. So it's a combination of kind of like an augmented reality game where they'll have websites that have been set up and seeded years in advance to be clues to help you solve puzzles in this game, which is really, really
cool.
Awesome.
Yeah.
It's a really fantastic concept, and they do all of that stuff really well. The world building is really, really interesting. And the problem with the original is that it was all draped over the top of just the worst like video game combat and movement I have ever encountered ever in anything.
Right.
And so with Legends, this was their attempt to take all of this stuff, and it's been, you know, running for a couple of years now, so they've got a lot of content, a lot of expansions, and make it work as a free-to-play game.
Mm.
And part of that was taking some of the old systems, their leveling systems and their weapon stuff, and making that more user-friendly and giving it a bit more of an action game feel, which has only made things worse, unfortunately.
Oh, so the awesomeness stops at the concept.
Well, the awesomeness is still in there. It's just that you have to get through this really, really, really bad stuff in order to actually enjoy that. And I can't. I cannot penetrate just how... just how unpleasant this and clunky this combat system feels. It's in trying to give it a bit more of an action game feel, they've taken out the what MMOs refer to as tab targeting, where you will select an enemy with your cursor and then press a button that has a power associated with it, and then that fires off.
Mm-hmm.
They replace that now with reticle targeting, as in, you know, the way that most first-person shooters work on the PC, where you're, you know, whatever is underneath the center of your mouse is the thing that you're going to shoot at. And somehow they have just made it more complicated and, like, feel even worse. And then that's tied into the fact that the opening parts of the game drop you down in this town that is a combination of every Stephen King book and every Lovecraft book, right? Which is great. I love both of these things.
Yep.
I wanna get in there, but there's a zombie outbreak, and so there are just hundreds of really boring enemies that charge immediately at you while you futilely click away at your dual pistol skill, hoping that anything interesting will happen, and it doesn't.
Yeah, so this bad combat and movement thing obviously permeates the entire experience.
Yeah.
So that, you know, it's basically a bad game.
Yeah, that's it. Like, there is a good game that is being strangled to death by a really, really bad game, and there's no way to get the bad game off it. That's the thing. I saw people talking about it on the internet, saying that it would have actually been better had they just taken all the combat out altogether,
yep,
and just left in all the puzzles and the narrative and all of the adventure gamey elements that make this so unique and interesting, and where they've clearly put the most effort. And at the time, I was like, well, that's crazy. But now, you know, several hours later, I'm like, no, that would be amazing if I could have just been dropped in this sort of Innsmouth-ish, like, town in Maine, and wandered through the fog trying to figure out what had happened to everybody.
Yeah.
And then if I'd have been able to then go and talk to the very obviously Stephen King-like horror mystery novel writer in the lighthouse about the goings-on, on the docks, and about the creatures emerging from the ocean, that would have been great. I would have been all over that game.
Because that sounds eerily beautiful.
Yeah.
That's something I would totally get into, that kind of setting and, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Artwork. But
that would have been amazing. But there were, like, 500 zombies between me and that guy, and killing them was just really tedious. I have played a lot of massive multiplayer online games, and I've endured a lot of bad combat, and I am always trying to fill the hole in my heart with another online world to inhabit for a while, and I desperately wanted this to be the thing that would make the secret world palatable. And as far as I can tell, it's somehow worse just by by making it even twitchier. I'm much more aware of how bad the animation systems are and how poor the feedback is and just how awful everything
You've got to
looks.
Wonder if they're there, like, if the developers are reading this and, you know, understanding the criticism and agreeing with it or being defensive. And, yeah. you know, if maybe in the future they follow this feedback and remove some of those tedious
Yeah, I mean, because it's an old game, and so reworking it to make it free to play, you know, means that they're, you know, trying to squeeze a bit more life out of what is, you know, clearly a lot of work and to get new people through it. Mm. But I just don't see how this is going to have any real legs. You know, there have been MMOs that have switched from being a subscription service to a paid game in the past,
yeah.
and they've been really successful at making that transition. Lord of the Rings Online was one of the first ones that did it, and it still somehow exists years later.
Yeah.
So there are ways of changing your experience and then still making it, you know, something that people will pay for, but I don't see why anyone would really want to be putting money into this. They've got too many strange cryptocurrencies and roadblocks in a system that, like you have to pay to unlock additional weapons, and I don't want any in the first place. So, okay. yeah, it's a concern.
So, under what circumstances should people play the Secret World Legends?
Oh, man. That's tough. Very tough.
It's free, after all.
It is free. It's very free. And yet, you know, and there is so much good stuff in there. I've personally found getting to that fairly intolerable.
Mm.
I think that the best way to experience this game would be to find someone who played it originally with a group and get them to tell you about the cool stuff that they did in it.
Then remember that cool stuff is difficult to get to,
yeah.
and don't waste your time doing it.
Yeah,
that's a shame, Lee. Well, I'm sorry you had to endure that game.
Yeah,
but thank you very much for your report. We appreciate it, and the listeners do, I'm sure, save them a bunch of time. That's going to bring us to the end of this week's episode of Zed Games. Thanks so much for tuning in. Great to have your company. We'll be back, of course, next week at the same time. Stay tuned now to 4ZZZ for the Dykes on Mikes program coming up at 7 p.m. And we're going to leave you now with a track from the Res Infinite soundtrack. This one's called Hydelic Butterfly Effect. And on behalf of the Zed Games crew, catch you guys next week. Have a good one.
Bye.